Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is officially episode number 25 of the season, and I'm here, as always, as most of the time, with my infamous co-host, sometimes famous, sometimes infamous, Matty Wood Davis. What's up, Matt?
Hi there. Things are going good. I'm watching some baseball as we are recording on Wednesday evening. Checking some things out. I have some starting pitchers on the mound tonight, and some are doing good and some are doing not so good. So just riding the waves per usual in fantasy baseball world. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on a little mini DFS hot streak, and you know how those go. It's feels like there's always never anything in the middle. You're either, you know, you're rocking or just nothing's going right. So had a little bit of a chicken strip for lunch. Chicken strips for lunch. Ross Stripling was like under 10%. It was a slate where like Carrasco and Garcia, Luis Garcia, were going against one another. I just wasn't interested there. Thought I'd go for the John Gray fade. I know that's probably something you usually don't recommend, being a Gray truther. But Ross Stripling was dirt cheap. I saw the lineup the White Sox were rolling out there. Just seemed like worth it. Gave it a shot. Ended up working out. Little mini miracle there. And now watching Rodon, I guess last I was looking, he hadn't given up a hit yet against the Atlanta Braves, who are leading the world in home runs.
Unfortunately, I sat John Gray in one of my main events. It was a tough decision to be made, but seeing that he was going up against the Phillies, that's one of those few teams in baseball right now that I'm looking to avoid in my 15-team NFBC main event leagues. I sat Blake Snell, John Gray, both of them are facing the Phillies this week. The Dodgers are another team. The Red Sox are one of those teams. But, you know, sometimes it does pan out. It actually, you know, John Gray might be turning the corner here. He's had a couple of good outings now back-to-back. And at the beginning of the year, it seemed, if I was a Texas Rangers fan, I would have been really frustrated watching him just leave. What it seemed like every outing he was leaving because his ankle was sore or his knee was sore or something very minor or minuscule in each of those outings. But it was frustrating to start the season. But it seems like he is starting to turn that corner. So it's nice to see. But good on you for riding Stripling. I wasn't expecting the beatdown to happen like it did on the South Side today in Chicago.
Yeah, it's random. I mean, Stripling's one of those guys that he just always seems to find a way to beat up on bad teams. Obviously, the White Sox are not a bad team per se, but you know, a matchup worked out. As for John Gray, two of his last four starts, he's got double-digit strikeouts. This is not including the start on Wednesday, June 22nd against the Phillies. But prior to that, two of his four, and kind of a weird home road split. He had been getting blasted on the road, but the home starts, he had only had three of his first 12. So he's, I think he's settling in a little bit. Obviously, the environment, you know, despite it being the AL, of course, now both leagues have the DH, but just getting out of Colorado is so big for him. Like I'm thinking about what sort of impact it would have on somebody like, you know, Germán Márquez, for example. And maybe that's not the best example because he has been he's pretty much had a down season, but for the most part, I mean, these Rockies pitchers are just, you know, I kind of swore off of them a long time ago in drafts because, you know, and we've talked about this before, but like, why am I going to take a starter, you know, for a couple years there? He'd have to be like your SP5 or SP6, where you'd occasionally have to be sitting him, or not occasionally, but quite often, even sometimes in a road matchup. And you're looking at like, okay, it's at Minnesota. They got Buxton and lineup looks kind of tough. Like, I don't know if I can go here. Right. So it's just tough. I mean, getting guys out of Colorado, the pitchers, I think is definitely a good thing, but yeah, I mean, that's just kind of one of my rules. Staying away from any pitchers, usually pitching at a course.
I also think it could be an organizational thing as well, similar to what we see when some of these starting pitchers or relievers leave Pittsburgh and they go somewhere else and they, you know, just by working with other starting pitchers alongside, or the new pitching coach, or however the front office and the staff that they provide for them, and everything in between, just leaving an organization and going somewhere else and finding something that works a little bit more, or, you know, doing something that's different that helps the case. And I think maybe that's, you know, one of the other benefits from John Gray leaving Coors, not just Coors, but Colorado itself and the organization. I think that that's a good thing for him. And hopefully Marquez does get out of there someday and we're able to see what he could do with the new organization.
You know, somebody, what's the guy's name? Feltner. I'm blanking on his first name, but somebody went like $60, $70, which I thought was kind of wild. I know it was a road to start, a two-step, and the first start went all right, Ryan Feltner. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, former fourth rounder in 2018, I guess you could say he's, you know, probably one of those guys that would probably be streamed pretty normally, or would be rostered probably over 90% if he was in just any other ballpark environment. I mean, he's not a bad arm, but just one of those guys that, you know, we just can't trust.
Yeah. Again, sometimes we get blinded by the jersey or the uniform that they wear, and they are on the road this week. I was in a pinch in the online auction championship, the $1,500 in Vegas, and I think I'm rolling out Chad Kuhl and Kyle Freeland in that team. That team's really hurting for pitching, and mm-hmm. I noticed that they were on the road this week, and I, you know, bid a buck, and that's where my contingencies ended up landing. So I get why they were using Feltner, and he does possess a little bit of strikeout upside. I was pulling up his fan graphs and I saw some numbers that were a decent. So I get it. Some teams, not all my teams are, you know, in that desperate dire straits need of starting pitching, but there are, I get it. There are a lot of teams in need of pitching. And when you're in a pinch, you've got to start scratching and clawing somewhere.
Yeah, and of course, obviously, nobody's using, unless you're just, I think, absolutely nuts, like a Kyle Freeland in a 12-teamer, even in a good matchup. Mm-hmm. But in 15-teamers, I mean, these guys end up landing in your conditional bidding, especially if you're needing that ninth spot. And in the case of Freeland, I mean, if you kind of don't know it even off the top of your head, you just dig in a little bit, right? It's this week had a matchup against the Miami Marlins, who happened to be striking out at the highest clip in the league against left-handed pitching. They had a couple of guys on COVID list with Jesus Sanchez and Jesus Aguilar. Freeland has a 3 ERA away from Coors Field, a huge split from his 5.5 ERA at home. And of course he's a lefty, you know, for that strikeout matchup. So yeah, there are a lot of things, and that's one of the important things, like kind of not taking your foot off the gas pedal and grinding for every one of those starting roster spots. They're so incredibly valuable, and need to be making sure we're making these right decisions. For example, you know, this week, I know in some ways it's a little, I wouldn't say it's too early to start looking at things like, it, you know, obviously like categories and things like that, but I have a main event team. I lost Liam Hendricks. I was not able to get Kendall Graveman there. Thankfully, I have two other decent closers. Jorge Lopez has been doing a phenomenal job, which has been a surprise. And then I have Tanner Rainey. But since I've been good in saves, I've been just kind of getting away with kind of sitting Tanner Rainey for quite a while. So I had this last second decision. I don't know what you think about it. I'm good in saves, and I need a grip of strikeouts. And so Tanner Rainey has a 5-game week, and I've got, you know, obviously I put Hendricks on the IL. Or I mean, on my bench, and I was deciding between a 5-gamer from Tanner Rainey, and only throwing out one reliever, Jorge Lopez, or starting Sonny Gray against Cleveland at home. And Sonny Gray's been decent. He has, you know, whatever, 9 starts, hasn't given up more than 2 runs in any of those starts. And to me, I don't know, at the time, it just kind of felt like an easy decision. And I know Tanner Rainey ended up getting a save, but I'm looking at him, and he's averaging what, 2 to 3 innings a week. So there are a lot of weeks where he does not get the save. Obviously Washington is a bad team. And so just kind of lined it up and like, okay, great. He might have a 3 save week. He'd be very lucky to do so. But with Sonny Gray, there's sort of like a low risk of getting blown up, to be honest, you know, at least as I think he could be getting blown up right now as we speak, but possibly a win, which are very valuable, move you up in the overall standings immensely. And then the strikeouts, right? 5, 6, 7 strikeouts, probably more than Rainey would get in a week.
Yeah, I would have. I'm all aboard that. I would have totally agree with that and concur on that move. Sonny Gray would have been in this decision for me as well. In the league that I posted a screenshot last night or this morning of I posted, I've got the trifecta. My NFBC Las Vegas main event team had three saves in one night, which is incredible. And most weeks I don't actually roll out or start three relief pitchers. But in the scenario that I'm in, well, I'm very strong in ratios. I'm right where I want to be in strikeouts and feel comfortable enough knowing with health forbidding, knock on wood right now, that if I'm let's say fourth or fifth in strikeouts, I'm pretty comfortable. I can kind of project looking at the league and whatnot that I can kind of make up a little bit when the time comes or need be, whereas the points that I can gain currently in saves, everything's really, really close still there. So three saves is massive for me. And to be able to get that at the beginning of the week is huge. And so for me, I was willing to sit somebody like John Gray that I mentioned earlier, Blake Snell against the Phillies as well. And I decided to just roll out the extra reliever. But in your scenario, whereas you're looking for the wins, you're looking for extra strikeouts, it just totally makes sense. So I think it is time. We're about 40% of the way roughly through the season. I know that there's a lot of fantasy managers in the high stakes realms that are still not looking really into the standings, where they're at in the league or in the overall competition in regards to roto categories. But I think it's time that you should probably start to peel back that onion just to see some of those roster decisions that you're talking about. At some point you are going to have to, dig into that, and it will make a difference in the decisions that you need to make. And Scott Jenstad, actually, him and I had a short discussion about that on Twitter. He sat Rainey as well and ended up rolling Pagan and another starter over him. And he said he was already regretting it because of the one save, but it's sometimes tough to really know which decision to make. But I think when you look at the standings and understand, like in your situation, I could use the strikeouts, I could use the win. That's a little bit more valuable than this, one or two saves that he might get this week. Then yeah, you should take that path. So I think about 40% of the way through is right about now is when I start to actually look into my league standings to kind of maybe help decide, make a decision for me and into who to start or who to sit. At what point in the season are you, is it now around the 40% mark? Are you starting to do that or is it earlier, later?
You mean sitting, deciding,
looking at your like league categories and your stats and saying, okay, I'm making a decision based on this. I need to start digesting where I'm at in league categories.
I'm even starting to do that in May, to be honest.
Okay. Really early.
Yeah, because you kind of have a feel of the direction your team is going. And for the most part, all my teams are pretty strong in pitching. I've had some good luck with saves on some teams, bad luck in others. But for the most part, it's my hitting is a little under or a little imbalanced, right? Like I have some teams that are very good. They're top of the league in runs and, middle of the pack in home runs and RBI. And you can kind of... these are the things you sort of need to get ahead of, right? If you end up having a lot of leadoff type guys on your team as like your key guys, you have like a Trey Turner and a Tim Anderson. It kind of shifts the balance of power. So you need to find those guys along the way early, almost like anticipate to balance it out. Because by the time July, August comes around, you're sometimes forcing it, right? Like you're looking for you're overvaluing somebody like a Jake Suwinski because he hit three home runs and you may, spend a lot for him and then get nothing out of him. So it can get dangerous. So I usually try to start that sometime in May.
Okay.
By the way, can we get some love for John Birdie, man? this guy, I mean, the impact that he's having on this fantasy season to people that have him on teams, just thinking alone about his 19 stolen bases is more than three teams combined. I mean, not the three teams combined, but the basically he's got more steals by himself than all the Detroit Tigers, all the Minnesota Twins, and all the Colorado Rockies. It's pretty impressive. And people that have been playing him the last couple of weeks have really seen a nice little surge up the standings. But my question to you is like, what happens when some of these guys come back, right? I mean, you've got Joey Wendell and Brian Anderson. I mean, they're both sort of, I mean, Anderson's a corner, can play, I guess he could play some outfield. You got Joey Wendell kind of, you know, left side of the infield. What happens? I mean, you just got to keep rolling Birdie out there while he's producing, right? And does the journey end, or do we just like continue to get this and Birdie gets to 40 plus steals?
Yeah, I don't think the 370 OBP necessarily sticks, but he's always been a guy that draws walks. So, I mean, it's definitely in the range of outcomes, right? And the stolen base success rate and everything in between, we've seen before, it's at this rampant rate is just absolutely insane. Though he's now surpassed Julio Rodriguez for the major league lead in stolen bases. I think J-Rod, if he hasn't stolen anything tonight, was at 18. Like you mentioned, Birdie's at 19. You just keep riding it. Everybody that is using him drafted him extremely late in draft champions leagues. And if you're using him in an online championship, any 12 team home league, 15 team high stakes league, whatever league it may be, you added him in fab and you likely added him, on the cheap. I think when people did scoop him up, it was before the 7 stolen base week. So he was costing about 2%, 1-2%. I believe was about what he was costing. So, you know, the ROI has already been through the roof. Congratulations, pat yourself on the back. So it just remains to be seen. Like you said, if guys come back, guys get healthy, he sizzles off, so be it. You just take with what was given to you and you ride it. And hope for something special, because that's definitely in the range of outcomes as well. There could be something. I'm not, you know, nothing too crazy, but I mean, even if he steals a couple bags a week, you know, and continues with the playing time, right? I think that's going to be the biggest concern, is playing time. How does Mattingly sprinkle in these other guys, like you mentioned, when they do come back? But if he continues up with the playing time and the volume, yeah, I'd keep riding the wave, because it's been a blast.
So speaking of another leadoff guy, a prospect that we're all fairly familiar with, and he has been leading off for his team over the course of the last week, and that's Jarren Duran. In fact, the lefty bat led off against a lefty on Wednesday, and that's got some people intrigued about his staying power with the major league club when Enrique Hernandez does return. And Hernandez can return this weekend, but Jarren Duran, he cannot go to Toronto for the weekend series, not vaccinated, and so he's not going to be there. But when I'm kind of looking at, I'm just looking at the lineup page over on Roster Resource on FanGraphs, and I'm just looking at this team, I'm like, and I'm thinking, okay, why is Jarren Duran leading off against a lefty? It's because they really don't have anyone else. Like, you're just looking at this lineup right now. I guess you could have had Rob Ruffsnyder as the leadoff man. He's just, you know, an old veteran, little plug-in guy. But, you know, he hit second in the lineup on Wednesday. But there really is no one else. You're obviously not batting guys like Devers, JD Martinez, Xander Bogaerts there. Alex Verdugo is pretty locked in at that 5 spot. Nick Schlein actually wrote him up in the House of Schlein article this week on FTN Fantasy. If you get a chance, check that out. But yeah, I mean, I think Duran sticks. If you're kind of looking at this bench, at least to me, I mean, they called up Jeter Downs, who's been like literally like the worst of these prospects, having a horrendous AAA season, was bad last year. He came up and hit ninth, third base. They've got, you know, Rob Ruffsnyder on the bench there, or with the team. Like, they feel a little shorthanded. They're really thick in the middle, right? They've, you know, the lineup is fantastic. Those big bats in the middle with, you know, from Devers down to Story, 2-6. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. To me, the roster just feels a little shy. So even when Kike comes back, I think Duran's probably going to stick with the team. There's no reason not to, right?
Yeah, I oddly enough agree that I think that this is the time that he sticks. And fortunate for people that were able to scoop him up this weekend, a little bit on the cheaper side, right? Because we've seen him get called up and go for a little bit more than he did this time. We've seen this 3 to 5 times, I believe he's come up. He's almost like the fancier version of Edward Olivares, so to speak, a little bit.
Yeah.
But now we have him on a better team, on a team that absolutely mashes, and he's getting to hit at the top of the lineup. And this time, I think the Alex Cora coach speak sounded a little bit different too. The way that he worded it, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it just felt like it was, he's coming up and he's going to stay. It felt like that. And you mentioned Rob Refsnyder. Like today was like one of the few times Rafael Devers wasn't in the starting lineup, and you looked at it and it was like, what do we have here with Boston? And then oddly enough, when you do have Devers, JD Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, Alex Verdugo, and Trevor Story, it's the thick of it, like you say, but it's the 2 through 6. It's always the 2 through 6. And they've still been hunting and searching desperately for a prototypical leadoff hitter. And I think Duran can give them that. And today seeing him start and lead off against a lefty is hopefully a telling sign of things to come.
So if you got
him, you should be excited, right? I mean, he's already gotten on base a few times. And then yesterday, and a couple stolen bases in one game. That's hot.
Indeed. Some other guys that we're looking to get back into our lineups, because it's been a while, talking specifically about the Tampa Bay Rays. Man, the lineup is putrid outside of Isaac Paredes and his home run on Wednesday, 3 homers the other day, just out of the blue. I mean, they're looking like
hit another one tonight.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, just a highway robbery with these Rays, man. I don't know what they see in these guys, and it makes us have to really think about it here, right? Because we knew it was a decent prospect, and those who play deeper leagues and DFS were familiar with Isaac Paredes with the Tigers last year, where didn't really do much. He was hitting 9th for a while, wasn't hitting for power, wasn't doing anything. Tampa Bay goes ahead and scoops him up, and he just fits right in. Still hitting .216 on the season, but the team called up Josh Lowe. You've got Vidal Brujan. He actually hit a bomb, his second of the season, a 3-run shot of Jordan Montgomery on Wednesday. So the lineup does not look that pretty on paper, but there are some decent bats here. And we're hoping to get Wander Franco and Brandon Lowe back. Brandon Lau, he's progressed to swinging a bat at this point. No timetable yet for his return, but that's going to be obviously pretty clutch. A lot of us have been holding him for a month. Wander Franco, he's in his AAA, his rehab assignment, so he might be back this weekend. Tough to say on Lau because we don't know when he'll be back, but any thoughts on Wander Franco, where things might fall for him for the rest of the season? Is he, once he kind of gets ramped up, are we thinking a second half where he's, and I don't want to use the term league winner, but like gets to a point where he might even earn a good chunk of his draft spot and hit for .340 for a long streak, hit some bombs, steal some bases. Like what's the expectation for Franco?
I certainly hope so. It felt like the injuries were having an effect, right, on his productivity. Out of the gate, people on Twitter were losing their minds saying like, hey, he's free money. Like, look, if wherever you drafted him, it doesn't matter if you jumped him early or if you got him, in the fifth or sixth round in some of the leagues that, you're able to get him a little bit later. But yeah, the rehab assignment is on tap. He's going to be in Durham for AAA. I'm hoping for nothing but good things. I do have him in some leagues, some big money leagues. And I don't know. I'm just hoping that it was the injury that kind of sizzled him off, because we did see him, we saw a couple weeks of sub 200 batting average, 24 plate appearances, 167 batting average. The week after that, he hit 0.63. And then the week after that, it was 190 before he got hurt. So let's hope that it was the injury.
Another one of your boys, Chris
Brandon Lau. Wait, real quick. I kind of want to say some negative things about both of them, Brandon Lau and Chris Bryant, because the last time I did that, when you and I were discussing things before you came to Chicago, it was about Jake Cronenworth. And I think he's been the hottest hitter on the planet since we've poo-pooed all over him. And then Gavin Lux, he's been probably that best middle infielder on that main event team that Zach Betancourt and I have after we talked about him. But where are you at on an organization that spends all that money on somebody like Chris Bryant, and then they let go of somebody like Nolan Arenado? And Nolan Arenado is this true warrior that plays each and every day. And he's just producing again for the Cardinals. And then they get this Chris Bryant guy that's nowhere to be seen, but he's going to be trying to come back again from this back. It's back injury, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to anticipate those things. You don't sign a player of that caliber for that much money expecting the guy to go to an IL. You figure it's a good hitting environment for a guy who basically has had a pretty solid career over the course, you know, right? I mean, 11.5% walk rate, a whole mess of home runs, a couple of a season where he hit almost 40. And just a good all around player. And obviously a lot of it happened in the year in between, when Arenado left and this frantic, signing of players, right after the, we found out that we got baseball again and the strike was over. And to me, it just kind of felt random. Like, I feel like a lot of teams were just sort of scrambling. And I think many of us are aware of kind of like what a hot mess the Rockies front office is. And it was like the recent, you know, hiring and firing of somebody. It's just a shit show basically. And they're like, all right, who's left? Okay. How much money we got spent? You know, it's like, you know, people with a whole bunch of money and not really smart and not really knowing what to do with it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, yeah, let's throw on Chris Bryant. And I think it kind of, you know, shocked a lot of people. And we saw his ADP just skyrocket, right? I mean, it was like, oh, Chris. I mean, listen, dude, you put on a uniform, you sign with the Rockies. You know, your ADP is going to go up at least to like the 55th round, right?
Yeah, and I was certainly one of those people that was buying into it and pushing him up. I drafted him in the 4th round of Vegas main event. I tweeted about it. You and I talked about it actually, and it's a segue to another person, so that'll be fine. But yeah, drafted, it goes to show you though, that you can screw up royally a lot of times and still hang in there. I wouldn't call it successful, but looking at my Vegas main event team, it's currently at 101 fantasy points, roto points, I should say. And it is in third place, 8 points back of first, which is Toby, Batflip Crazy. And in second place is John Posma, who is one of the GOATs in the industry. But in the first round, I drafted somebody that you want to talk about, and that's Brandon Woodruff. Do you have any Woody? I know that you were kind of off of him, huh?
You know, I'm always scared of those, just the first round pitchers. It's one of those things. I had him and Buehler pretty much neck and neck, and you know, I did have a main event, one of my three main event teams, the latest one I had done. I took Betts and Buehler at the turn. And that was actually a scenario where Woodruff was not available. And you can't predict these things, right? I mean, he's been phenomenal for the past three seasons. There's no reason to think that he wouldn't at least come close to earning that draft spot. Like, we don't need the full, I mean, there was no more breakout at that point, and you are paying full value for these type of guys. So, you know, it just comes down to draft strategy for each of us, right? Not many of us playing in the main event. Not everyone's comfortable waiting till your fifth, sixth round for your first starting pitcher. You get yourself into some very uncomfortable builds, and then you have to really nail a lot of those breakouts and avoid the landmines. So, you know, drafting that early round pitcher is supposed to provide you some level of confidence. And hey, this season has been no different than any other season in the past. You take the first eight pitchers drafted within the first three rounds of a 15 teamer, and you will have, you know, three of them hit value, three of them injured or not hit value, and then the others just sort of middling, right? It's always the case, but you never know. It's like it's a roulette. You never know who it's going to be or who it's going to hit, and you can't really take victory laps after, like, oh, now that Buehler's hurt, yes, of course he's not worth that borderline first round pick, but. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say with, like, you know, these guys, the shit just happens. What can you do?
Well, yeah, well, that and Brock and I were talking about it when you guys were in Chicago, and he was like, dude, he's like, I was totally planning and hoping to take Brandon Woodruff in our Vegas main event. I wanted him at the turn. That's who I had circled. And once you took him, I was really upset. And it's weird because in this league, I have, at the time before today started, it was 61 league points in pitching. And if I were to tell you in a main event, in a Vegas main event with a lot of high stakes competitors, if I drafted Woodruff in the first, Blake Snell in the sixth, and then I didn't take another starting pitcher until the double digit rounds, you definitely would not think that I had 61 league points in pitching. And you sneakily said that you would need to hit, you know, pretty much all of your pitching. And I fabbed Kyle Wright and Tyler Anderson. I drafted Tony Gonsolin, Jordan Montgomery, Tristan McKenzie, Jameson Taillon, you know, and that's kind of where it worked out. So I was fortunate enough to hit, and some of those guys hit really, really strong. And those are the boosts that you need, able to basically be a crutch for somebody like Brandon Woodruff, but he is coming back. He is scheduled to return. Is it next week? I believe. Is he going to do one more rehab outing? I know his last rehab outing was pretty spectacular too.
Yeah, he's got one more on Thursday, so he would line up to face Tampa Bay on the road next Wednesday, and then he would line up for the gorgeous. Hey, I'm back in the groove of things. This is the sort of the deciding week. I guess it'd be like week 15, 14, whatever. Chicago Cubs and Pittsburgh Pirates at home. So you got to go out and you know, you kind of get your feet back under you, get your innings back up between rehab and the Tampa start on the road. And then you just come out and dominate and just crush it the rest of the year. So this is like your you know, this is a key week for Brandon Woodruff starting the week of July 4th. Fireworks, yes. On July.
And then I'm going to get back Chris Bryant and Brandon Lau on that main event team. Here we go.
It's nice. I mean, it's nice. You know, we stash sometimes and it has to be done. And hopefully it's not to the detriment of taking zeros in starting lineup. But when the reserves come in, you know, when the troops come ready to, yeah, you take them home for the second half of the season.
And you know what, too, the luxury of that too, is if I could get, not obviously anything I projected or where I drafted these guys at, but if I get these guys back and they're everyday players, right? Everyday players hitting in the heart of those lineups. Mm-hmm. Those are huge, huge boosts just to your counting cats and just the volume in general, you know. And then on top of that, it allows me a lot more leniency, dude, when it comes to churning and burning, or if I want to stash somebody, because I do not have that luxury right now at all. Mm-hmm. I am basically using anything and everything I'm adding, you know, and it's each and every week, man. I have like $260 left in FAB, but I feel okay. I've got Woodruff coming back. I've got Bryant and Lau coming back. If they all can stay healthy, and just give me a little bit, man, just give me a little bit. Don't even give mm-hmm. me first round, fourth round, and sixth round production or fifth round production. And I think I'll be all right. So, I'm motivated right now. We're 40% of the way through, and I sent you earlier a bunch of teams. I sent you the main event teams I'm in. I sent you the OCs. I sent you all the industry leagues just to kind of, you know, show you where I'm hanging right now. And I feel looking pretty good. Yeah. Looking, yeah. We're doing all right. But you know how it is. I mean, there's bad weeks, and we've talked about it before. You have those bad weeks, you get in lulls, and the energy just might not be there the same as a good mm-hmm. week or an energetic night. And I think that's one of the hard parts, and one of the things that, you know, gives fantasy players success at the end of the season is having that energy mm-hmm. even during the shitty weeks when bad things happen.
Yeah, because you can't just be a robot, right? Like,
and not all of us. Phil.
Yeah, yeah. No, obviously we know Phil very well, and he does have, despite being a robot, he does have emotions like the rest of us. So. What was I going to say? Oh, John Birdie, by the way, he's obviously you can be listening to this long after, but he's on base at first. So it's emoji eyeballs all around as he looks to maybe steal another.
Not
base.
No more, because we got a Jazz Chisholm home run.
Jazz.
Jazz is on one of my main event teams too. So
I would imagine by the energy of the excitement of that, I'm sure it wouldn't be for a random.
Sorry, Birdie.
Run.
Yeah,
he's
sorry,
my
Birdie.
Seventh DC.
Managers. I have
7% share of yeah. Jazz Chisholm. Okay, so let's get to the heart of things. I wanted to talk about rookie hitters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them. I mean, I think very clearly We know who the big dogs are, and they're doing great, right? There's it's Julio Rodriguez, Crazy Helium there towards the end of draft season, the end of March, when we knew he was going to, when he was mashing in the minors and we knew he was going to be a part of this team. But man, he's been hitting all over the lineup. He is second to John Birdie in stolen bases, 18. He's got 9 home runs so far. I think like 250 plate appearances, something like that. Hitting 272, nice and smooth. K's are a little high. He's got the K rate down a little bit. Remember, it was like 40% early on. It's around 30%, just a tick under 30. Barrel rate is up there, slightly above average, 11%. So he's been doing great. Bobby Witt Jr., he looks good. He looks really good. Remember that slow April? No more. He's already halfway to our 2020 prediction. He's got 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases through Wednesday's game before he takes on the Angels Wednesday evening and Shohei Ohtani and company. His barrel rate just a tick under 10% under Julio Rodriguez's, and a little bit better on the strikeouts as well, 24%, which he has reduced greatly over the last few weeks. Locked in. I don't know the numbers in front of me, but since he's been hitting third in the lineup, he's been absolutely crushing it. If Salvador Perez ends up missing time, hits the IL because he re-aggravated his thumb injury, that's obviously going to sting a little bit because you don't have that protection, you know, behind you in the lineup a little bit. But he's been looking really, really good. Next season, Julio, because of the stolen bases, he's going to be kind of the clear, kind of like the guy above him in drafts, right? But we probably shouldn't be too far behind, right? If he ends up with 24 homers, 24 stolen bases, hits 270, 100 runs scored, I mean, he's going to be what, like a second, third round pick? Or is it just too early to assess all that? You're on.
Woo, there we are. Sorry about that. Yeah. It's going to be tough to say because if you take away Witt's first month, and even Julio, he struggled as well. The race between them is a bit closer than we would think. And then on top of that, I think Witt's going to possess just a little bit more power maybe in the end game. And looking at his ISOs over the last 2 months has me pretty optimistic with him. I swung and missed on Bobby Witt altogether, and I'm pretty bummed about that. I would say now, even though we're only 40% of the way through, that I'm pretty much going to be wrong on that one, giving him the nod wave when the time came for the Vegas drafts and the main events. Mm-hmm. Was he going fourth round, fifth round? I think Spore took the mint on him, nabbed him around like pick 60 or something like that. But I think that I wouldn't just say as of today that J-Rod just necessarily goes before him. Witt, I don't know, man. He's cooking. He's cooking. And I think that the love for him when he gets going is just, it's a little more, I don't know. People seem to gravitate towards him, whatever it may be. It's tough. But I think both, long story short, or quick answer would be second round, early turn, right? Beginning of the turn for both. I don't know. Is that crazy? Second round?
No. I mean, listen, again, so much can happen between now and then, but basically if they just kind of stick to their path, plus the helium of being a young guy and guys that still bases, obviously catch a little bit more, in a little bit more excitement. So, we'll see how that goes. Some other guys in the mix. I mean, obviously Jeremy Peña, that dude was cruising for quite a while. I mean, this is the sneaky end of draft season, like the guy, and he had been phenomenal for Houston before his thumb injury, hitting 277, 9 homers, 6 swipes, and hitting sort of the near the bottom of the lineup, moved up just a little bit, but there isn't really much room to move up in that lineup. He's taken some swings, is eligible to come off the IL this weekend, so he should be back. Unfortunately, with guys like Julio and Bobby Witt, it's going to be tough for him. He's really going to have to crush it in order to even come close to competing for the Rookie of the Year. I mean, he'll probably be a top 5 candidate, whatever. He'll be very intriguing in drafts next season, but for the most part, I mean, he's just kind of, he's a little bit down in that race, no matter how much fantasy value he's going to have the rest of the season.
Yeah. So looking at the shortstop position, Xander Bogaerts, Tommy Edman, Dansby Swanson, and Trey Turner are the only shortstops that have a higher WAR than Jeremy Peña on the year, which is fucking impressive for a rookie shortstop playing on the team he plays on. I mean, it's ahead of Francisco Lindor, Corey Seager, and then, hey, there's Bobby Witt at 9. Bobby Witt's currently at 1.7. So Jeremy Peña has a higher WAR than Bobby Witt, but going back to fantasy stats and numbers, Peña can do both. He has 9 home runs and 6 stolen bases. It's just not to the same magnitude, right? And then the opportunity to hit second or third, like we've seen with J-Rod and we've seen with Bobby Witt, those organizations and some of the lack of talent surrounding them is going to allow and provide them to sneak up in the batting order. So, he's the milder, you know, not as sexy version, but he's just, I don't know, man. He's like, he's good. He's legit. He's legit. And I'm willing to bet sharp players, fantasy players and managers next year are going to be clamoring to draft him wherever that may be when the time comes, because he's going to be hitting on a really good team. And there's certainly some room for growth, and he is a damn good baseball player.
And I picked up, somebody that we had solid expectations for, and we weren't sure where he was going to sign. There was a rumor he was going to join the Boston Red Sox, ended up in the Chicago Cubs, looked like he fit in perfectly, had a phenomenal April. We're talking about Seiya Suzuki. He's been out for quite a bit dealing with an injured finger. He has not played since May 26th. He was shut down for a little bit, about a week and a half ago, just to give it some more time to heal. But he is, I guess, slowly moving on his way back. I did pick up a couple of him unopposed, actually. People were not bidding on him in 12 teamers, just because, like, the upside for the second half, if he's healthy, if the finger is okay. But he did show some warts there after his hot start in April. Yeah, nearly 90 plate appearances. He hit 4 homers, stole a bag, hit .280. He was looking good. And then just completely, basically stunk in the month of May. Nearly the same amount of at bats. He was hitting .210. Strikeout rate was up the wazoo. I think it was like 40%, something like that. So he really sort of struggled. Almost the opposite way in which you think somebody like that may adjust coming over to the major leagues for the first time. He did the exact opposite. Was crushing early on, and then kind of got behind the eight ball. But so now he's hurt. At some point he comes back. I do think if he is available in 12 teamers, people do need to take a look. There will come a time when he's going to be 100% rostered again in 12 team formats. And you don't want to be, you want to pick up on those type of things early, right? Like it's funny how much these waves go of players, like up and down, right? Like everybody's off the Javier Baez trade. Oh, he's done. He's done. Oh, Charlie Morton. He's done. He's done. Guess what? These guys are just fine. And the people that were hot early on, those guys are cooled off. And, you know, simple as that sounds, it's a very cyclical game. It's a very long season, and these streaks are just, you know, expected from these guys. But Seiya Suzuki, I think now would be the time to kind of jump in on him in 12 teamers if you can grab him for cheap with him coming back soon.
Before he landed on the IL this sprain, this index finger sprain, do we know, was it right away? I can't recall because it's been a while. Was it like, oh, he's been battling this finger, been bothering him, he's been playing through it, or it was like, oh, he's got a bad finger, he's on the IL?
Yeah, I think it was the latter.
Okay, so maybe it's just pure growing pains, right? That's just something that's natural, and we see with a lot of players, especially coming over internationally and rookies just in general. But he is somebody, if we go back to who he was or who he is and what we knew or know going in, high contact rate, draws a lot of walks, good plate discipline. So let's try and get back to that, right? And hopefully that we'll see more of that now that he's healthy with the finger. And like you said, if that is the case, then yeah, you are going to see 100% rostership.
All right. We're talking about three guys here who have been, I don't want to say sneaky good, but they've been definitely worth the money. Okay, maybe one guy has been worth it, but he was expensive. Actually, they were all, I guess it depends. But okay, so the three guys are Alec Thomas of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Michael Harris of the Atlanta Braves, and Christopher Morel of the Chicago Cubs. So Alec Thomas hit his sixth home run of the season in the Wednesday morning game against the Padres. He has moved up from kind of earned his dues, I guess you can say, hitting seventh and eighth for a while and occasionally sitting against lefties. Now he's in the lineup pretty much every day. Yeah, they have some injuries. David Peralta's missed some time, but he's been hitting second over the last couple games. Just really looks the part of a big leaguer. Six homers, four swipes, thinking like about around 100 plate appearances, and a nice low 17% strikeout rate, nice and below average there. So you got Alex Thomas, but he did cost over $100 in some leagues. Michael Harris of the Braves, decent prospect. He started off slow, but man, is that guy, he warmed up. He's kind of taking over Dansby Swanson's spot, hitting ninth. Now Swanson's crushing it from the two-hole. But Michael Harris is now, through 88 plate appearances, through Tuesday's games, hitting .345. I think he's hitting like .500 over the last 10 days or so. A few homers, a couple of swipes, but man, that kid's looking good. And then Christopher Morel got the day off on Wednesday. In just 150 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 7 stolen bases, Chicago Cubs really have nothing to lose but to have given him that leadoff role. And he's been running with it over the last 2 weeks. He's cooled off over the last few days, to be expected from a rookie. But so far, all three of these guys are earning their keep. My question to you is, which of these guys do you like the best for the remainder of the season? Do you think Alec Thomas can hold that number two spot? And do you think Michael Harris can move up in the lineup? Is there any room for it besides of injury?
Yeah, so I would actually rank them rest of the season: Thomas, Morel, and then Harris. And Harris has the highest, Thomas and Harris have the higher pedigree than Morel. But Morel, when comparing him and Harris, it's the leadoff spot and the spot in the lineup. Harris isn't going to find himself at the top there in the Atlanta Braves offense. It would take a whole lot of injuries for that to occur.
Or just one, right? Acuna?
Yeah. And if that happens with Acuna and Albies, that would be unfortunate. But yeah, I think you would need something that's pretty major, that's pretty massive, to have Ronald Acuna just be gone. Although that did occur last season. But I think when weighing things that we know, Morel being in the leadoff spot gives me the nod for Morel over Harris. But then with Thomas over Morel, it's Thomas now hitting at the top of the lineup. He has the better pedigree, and he looks like he's turning it on. So looks like the fab money could be worth it with Thomas. And if you did land Morel or Harris on the cheap, kudos to you, because they're doing pretty good too.
Yeah. For me, I'm invested in Alec Thomas. I did pick him up in two of my main event leagues. He was just one of my guys that I decided I was going to spend for. I think I spent between 120, 180 when he was promoted. So big fan. That did not allow me the money to be able to grab somebody like a Michael Harris. And I also did not expect for his bids to be over $100 in 15 teamers, 12 teamers. It took a little bit for folks to catch on. He did go for, I think, average of 40 or something in 12 teamers, but then was scooped up in the rest of them the following week. But for me, it's Thomas, Harris, and Morel. I don't know what it is. I think like Morel is the guy. I think that this is the team that could most likely move things around in the lineup based on how hot someone's doing. So if Morel cools off, I can see them just pulling back and getting somebody else there in the leadoff spot. So obviously they don't have all that many options, but man, it can go right back to Rafael Ortega against righties at any time. We saw Rafael Ortega starting against a righty with Morel having the day off.
Sorry about that. Maddie Wood had a little malfunction, but we are back, and Vlad is clamoring about Morel. Apologies about that, amigo. Do you want to
say anything else about him? Or? This is a first. I mean, this is a podcast first, man. We're watching each other on the thing, and we're sitting here recording, and obviously we can, you know, release the curtains a little bit. But like, guys, I'm sorry, but I'm going to be doing most of the talking the next 15 minutes. I think Maddie had some, I don't know, food poisoning or something, but you just look like, yeah, we had a pause for a few minutes there. Man, I feel really bad for you, bro. I hope everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, we're okay. It's coming, going in waves. I haven't been feeling good today, and I wanted to delay the pod, but figured we would battle through it. But yeah, it caught me in the midst of recording with you. So I had to have a restroom break. But we're good to go now.
I was wondering what
a little bit of vomiting occurred, but that's it.
I was going to ask. I was wondering what the hell Christopher Morel ever did to you. That's,
made me sick because I didn't get Adam and Fab.
So next couple of guys we're going to touch on. Kind of surprising. Honestly, I did not know too much about either of these guys. And they're not hitting necessarily for a lot of power, but they've been staples in their lineups, in their respective lineups. One almost got sent down when he shouldn't have been, and that guy's Luis Gonzalez. He's been playing really well for the Giants. He's hitting over 300. He's got a 360 on base percentage, 7 swipes and 180 plate appearances. He did get scratched from Wednesday's game. But man, we've seen him hitting lead off against some righties, kind of holding it down while the team's still waiting on Lamont Wade. So you never know with this team, but a bat like that, I feel like needs to kind of stick around in the lineup. He was scratched for lower back tightness, so hopefully that is something that's just minor and he'll be fine. But yeah, 26-year-old left-handed bat, Luis Gonzalez. The other one's Brendan Donovan of the St. Louis Cardinals. This dude is like the new David Fletcher. I think he was hitting like 500 for like a 10-day stretch, moved himself up to the second, the two-hole in the lineup between Edmund and Goldschmidt, which is like the gold mine. It's like the, you know, it's just the nut spot, right? Hitting second between those two. And he's been phenomenal. I think only one home run on the season, nothing spectacular there, but just he just continues to gain positional eligibility. You know, similar to Fletcher, who had 4 positions of eligibility. He's getting there everywhere, like everywhere across the board. Fantastic walk rate, 13%, just good, you know, walk K rate. Everything looks really, really good with the guy. 425 on base percentage. So these type of guys are valuable. I understand you don't want to have too many. If you have a Michael Brantley and you have Miles Straw, you don't want to take a Brendan Donovan type to add to your team because you're not going to get a lot of power. But these are guys to watch, right? I mean, sometimes these players, they're less sexy from a fantasy standpoint, but they do still have some value, you know?
He's such a sick cutline player, dude. If you were able to get him in Fab, I know that he's not the big popper, right? Like he's you know, not gonna give you a week like Cody Bellinger, 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases or whatever, but the consistency and being able to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then, you know, first base, second base, outfield, third base, corner infield, middle infield, I mean, that's just huge. And he's gonna I like him, but that ship sailed, right? He's pretty much, he's all gobbled up. I could see him being available though in potentially like 10 team, 12 team home leagues. Maybe he could still be hovering around. And if you need some flexibility, you know, he's somebody I think that you can just, he's like a what are those sweet little knives?
Yeah, the Swiss Army one.
Swiss Army knife. Yeah, that's what he is, right? It's like the boomer saying about something, like, do a lot. So, yeah.
Well, and you know what's great? So, remember, he was third base to start when he was available in an FBC in most leagues. He has now started or hit that minimum at first base, at second base, at third base, and an outfield. So, he now has 4 positions of eligibility. Obviously, you can, you know, move him to middle and corner. He's soon to get shortstop, I guess, at some point, right? So, but 7 games at shortstop. So this is something special. There's definitely a lot of value. And like you said, cut line, exactly the type of guy that we're looking for. Some disappointing guys here. One of them is Bryson Stott, who I think I've now fabbed 3 times on a single main event team. I think I've spent like over $100 total on him, and, you know, 3 times or maybe twice. I don't know, whatever. Dude's hitting 162. Like, one of those guys, you know, you feel like he owes you, and obviously nobody owes you anything in fantasy sports. But I mean, he's hot when he's either not in your lineup, or you're not expecting to play him because, you know, they got a bunch of lefties coming up, or you think he's getting sent down to the minors, and then you put him in, and then he hits 100 for you, you know, 4 strikeouts in the game. So this guy, you know, I will, no one will ever be like dead to me, but there are certain players it's hard not to have biases of. And so for what he has done to me, I feel like I'll always sort of remember Bryson Stott. So you got him, you got Stephen Kwan, who was, going to be, the ultimate goat god of fantasy after like what, two games of the regular season. We were all so excited to have baseball back, and yeah, he's picked up the pace a little bit over the last couple weeks, but literally like, no homers, no steals. Like,
he's eating up again.
Yeah. And we talked about him, right? We talked about him a couple of weeks ago.
You were saying you had a gut. Okay. Random thought real quick. Did you know he's from Los Gatos?
Like from up north. Yeah, I know he's from the Bay. Yeah. Okay. I know he's from, yeah.
You were saying in Chicago that you were like, he's going to wake up after everybody cut him and they're done with him. They're like, he's hitting at the top of the lineup now. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see that. Yesterday, he had like 3 or 4 hits yesterday. Today, he's 2 for 3 with a run and an RBI. He's got a triple. So we could be seeing that again from him. And he is hitting at the top of the lineup. So if you got him, go with it for now, right? And then if he starts mm-hmm. to sizzle off. But the thing is, if he sizzles off, he's absolutely worthless. I know that sounds terrible to say about a human, but from a fantasy sports perspective, mm-hmm. It's kind of like Alex Verdugo. And Alex Verdugo, if you know me, I love Dougie. Like, he's one of my favorite players in baseball. The unfortunate part is Alex Verdugo could hit 400 and 500. And if he's got to be scoring a massive amount of runs and a massive amount of contributing in RBIs, because the home runs are very bleak and so are the stolen bases. And if you aren't getting a high batting average and a lot of runs from Stephen Kwan, you're probably not getting much at all. So if he's not hitting 300 or close to it, and hitting at the top of the lineup, scoring runs, it's probably going to be hard for him to be above replacement value, right?
You basically, it's a specific scenario. You have a team that just is good everywhere except for batting average. You just really need a boost. You kind of time it. If you recall, David Fletcher went on this insane rampage where he hit 450 for nearly a month. He was unstoppable. He was the best hitter every day, 2-3 hits a game, even hitting some home runs here and there. You want to kind of catch that lightning, lightning in a bottle, whatever that phrase is. But he's hitting 390 over the last 2 weeks. Over that same stretch, and there's a good reason why Miles Straw has been demoted. He's 4 for his last 46 over the last 2 weeks. A 143 on base percentage, no homers, no runs batted in, just 3 runs over the last 2 weeks, hitting 087. I do have him on a couple of teams, kind of just went contrarian. I'm like, all right, let me just get a Straw. And he's just been on my bench. And I even remember this past Sunday, I was thinking when I was doing my fab, I'm like, you know what? There might come a point where he's droppable, especially if you picked up a birdie on that type of team, like at some point. But you know what happens as soon as you drop somebody like that, he just wakes up. This it's also cyclical, man.
It sounds like some of those people got the short. Oh, it's not the straw. It's the short end of the stick.
Oh, almost
swing and miss.
You almost had the best Ericksonism.
Right.
Close. Spencer Torkelson, first overall pick, hitting 195, 4 home runs. I think we've seen him pick up a pace a little bit. I haven't looked too much into his rate stats. Torky's hitting 200 over the last 2 weeks. Did I just make up the name? I'm sure somebody's called him Torky before. Okay. 292 over the last week, which again, it's really hard to even quote batting average over the course of the week. It's also random and, but yeah, he's 7 for 24, no homers, just 3 RBIs. I don't know, man, this Detroit team, we thought maybe for a second, I mean, the only thing good that's happened since Riley Green was promoted or back, or made his MLB debut from missing all that time from injury, is he woke up Javi Baez.
Sure as fuck did.
Yeah. So Javi Baez is...
You know what happened, right? Is he walked through the door and there's reporters and there's fans getting excited and there's somebody that's, in air quotes, cooler at the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, nah, papi, ain't happening around here. I'm the primo. So he's just got to get the, he's got to be the most popular, fun, exciting guy in the room. And Riley Green was going to be
the richest guy in the room. Mickey, of course.
It's Torkelson, though, when looking at first base and corner infield, especially when you're not going to be getting a lot of stolen bases from this position, you need that power and you need him contributing in the counting stats. And with that offense in that lineup, in that park, you're not getting a lot of power. You're not getting a lot in the counting stats. And unfortunately, if you're not getting the batting average, then what are you getting?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be, in my league, Luke Voit was available. Should that league manager, if that was your scenario, should you have cut Torkelson for Voit? Maybe he's not a cut, obviously, in a 15-team league because he's an everyday player. But in 12-team leagues, I think that maybe you got to start looking at other options. No.
I mean, well, did you say in a 12-team you got to look for other options?
You
should be gone.
I mean, should be cut, on your, right? You should be looking for other options.
Yeah, you should.
On the 15, since he's an everyday player, maybe you just put him on the pine for now. But Luke Voit is a perfect example. I think even Jesus Aguilar might be available in a couple leagues because he was on the COVID list. Mm-hmm. I would rather have him.
Yeah, I know. Easily. Guys hitting third in the lineup as opposed to seventh of a crappy lineup. Yeah, it's a no-brainer. I think there
one team has Birdie, one team has John Birdie, and the other doesn't, too. So,
yeah.
Jesus Aguilar is just driving in birdie all day, so it's easy money.
It works. A couple more guys here. Obviously, O'Neill Cruz, there's only so much we can say about him, and kind of guy that he looks like he's going to be with his exit velocity and everything, right? Hitting, throwing, peeing. Didn't need to get a X-rated there. Just awesome. This guy looks like a beast leading off on Wednesday night, which is cool. O'Neill Cruz, hopefully he was dropped in some 12 teamers. So hopefully people scooped him up. I saw him going.
He's available in one online championship, just one. And if it's a super active league, I'm curious to see how much he goes for. I'm sure we'll find out, but he's 99% rostered.
Yeah. Yeah. So those couple leagues, what you're hoping for is the guy that hasn't been or gal in your league that hasn't been spending money all season or just like they're not really comfortable with fab or they're just not real NFBC players. They just kind of like join some leagues and they're not doing all that well. You hope that they don't care to look just to see if he's available because, right? I mean, if you hardly play or pay attention, but you kind of like, oh, O'Neill Cruz, you know, you could be that person who spoils your league. Is like, oh, I got 800 left. Let's go 750. Let's just, make sure I get him on my team and just screw everybody. So that can happen. It has happened. Happens every year in every league.
The online championships are just so much more difficult to get a gauge and a feel for the fab market in general, right? I mean, it's just each and every week, there's somebody to be had that you can pick up for a dollar, man. Those contingencies, even though the player pool's deeper, there's more people to add, et cetera, but it seems like I'm happy just dollaring out like 10 different people a night. And if there's someone that I'm not really adamant on, getting in my 12 teams, that's kind of how I go about my business. I just churn and burn and dollar these guys out until there is Alec Thomas was one of the guys that I added in both my online championships. Because I kind of just waited because, these 12 teams, you can get a lot of guys for cheap. But then when you think you can get somebody cheap, you might go for $300+ too. So it's very, very difficult. I think one of the things you could do in those more than your main event league, if you're in a 15-team league, is you can go back to see the league tendencies just a little bit more to see, to get a grasp on the range of outcomes in these bids, right?
I was going to say that. Yeah. So whenever I have time, and this is a problem when you have too many fab leagues, in my case, it's 10 and sometimes I got family stuff to do. Like I can't really, if I want to do Fab right for 10 teams, like at least give me a half an hour per team. Right. I think that's important. So that's why I sometimes throw in some bids Saturday just to make sure that I'm not sort of running out of time. But if I had a little bit extra time, I would go back and look at previous week's bids. And I do that sometimes because all these OCs are so different. Right. But you can almost, you can feel it, not feel it. You can see it. You can literally see it in the examples of how all the previous weeks have been, right? Like there's some leagues where it's much easier to get certain players, just more people are out of it or not competing or just, there's a huge difference in these, but you can feel it based on the bidding tendencies of every week. I think I pretty much just said what you were just saying, right?
Yeah. Also too, with that, I think these 12 team online championships, I'm more than willing to have less, so to speak, going into that last month, the highly coveted, how much money do you have left in September month? Because there definitely is a tapering off of competition. You will get a sense of even teams in like fourth or fifth place. You'll be like, man, this team's only 10 points out. And you'll look and click on their actual team to see what they've done or who they're starting. And they've got like a fucking guy on the IL and they're starting pitching. You're like, wait a minute. Has this guy been doing anything the last couple of weeks?
Yep.
And once you start to notice that, that's when you really got to keep striking. And that's where you make that money, baby.
This is true.
That's where it's at. So yeah, I'm the 12 teams are just, they're just fucking nuts. They're just nuts. That's the only way to put it. But they're a lot of fun.
Last few guys I'll touch on here. You got the rookies for the Cardinals. They haven't gone down, right? They've been in the lineup almost every day. Nolan Gorman, obviously, former first round pick from 2018, lefty, had that 2 home run game, I think on Tuesday night. And yeah, he's been holding it down at second base and was in the lineup against the lefty as well, a little bit lower in the lineup, but despite a high strikeout rate, which a lot of people expected and predicted, he's playing. Doesn't look like he's going down anytime soon. And they don't have many middle infielders, this team, so they could really use him. Juan Yepes actually was out, didn't play, I think, 3 or 4 straight days towards the end of last week, but he's been in the lineup over the last couple of days. He's cooled off, I think, a lot as expected, but I think both these guys stick around. A couple of the Rangers there towards the bottom of the lineup, and both third basemen, one's a shortstop, third baseman, Ezekiel Duran and Josh Smith. Josh Smith, more of a speedster. Duran, kind of a combo guy. Josh Smith is somebody to probably keep an eye on, see how he does this weekend in terms of FAB, especially if he steals some bases. So, yeah, those guys. And then obviously Jake Suwinski, who we saw hit third one day, or hit 3 home runs one day. Then he hits third. Then he's out of the lineup. So, you know, it's just stuff you're going to see. And then, of course, Jake Berger, who had that streak while we were in Chicago, and then he got slightly hurt, and then he's cooled off as well. So,
yeah, I think so. I want to talk about the Suwinski and the Berger. Suwinski, it sounds like he's the next door neighbor in Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, right?
Rick Moran.
It's Zielinski. Zielinski.
Yes.
So these guys are perfect examples of, like, sometimes you just miss the boat. Like, you probably, Phil Dussault was really good at this last year. He would get the dollar bid on some fucking guy. I'm like, who is this? And it was like Park from Pirates. And it's like, oh yeah, he's been leading off all week. And he ends up with just this absurd amount of runs and batting average or whoever it may be of the type of player or whatever. But it doesn't last forever with all of these guys. And if you miss the boat and you ride it too long, it can sink your own ship, and it's unfortunate. When I saw these Berger bids, I thought they were too aggressive. I thought we were bidding on last week's production. This was the flavor of the week. Ironically, it was the name of food. And I don't know. I think we see this far too often. There's plenty of other guys that are going to be in similar situations that are going to cost you, you know, 4 to 5% less than the Jake Berger did, or somebody similar to that just had the hot week. You don't, when you're bidding these guys, you obviously know that you're not getting the last week's production. So what are we really hoping for when we're putting in something like that? I think that we need to temper those expectations more than we do sometimes. I think highlighting that's actually pretty important when we see, you know, some guy like Suwinski. Oh, look, he's got 3 home runs. We're for sure going to bid on him this week. Why? Well, he fucking hit 3 home runs. Okay, well, do you think he's going to hit 3 home runs this week? Probably going to tell you no. So what's he going to do? Where are we leveling out to? Where are we regressing? What's going on after this? And I think we get really excited about those weeks players pop off a little too much.
Yep. I mean, that's the state of the game. These are the rookies, right? I mean, they all go through their ups and downs, and it's just a part of the game. But yeah, it's, you hit on a couple of them, they end up really helping out your season. Could be an Alec Thomas this year. It could be somebody that you got for really cheap. It could be, you know, Josh Smith from this point on, or Ezekiel Duran, right? So, but either way, for the most part, it's really rare that you get somebody like a Julio Rodriguez or Bobby Witt that's like a true difference maker. but it almost doesn't matter if you're paying, you know, what they were costing. Fourth, fifth round pick, you're paying for best case scenario, really.
Two of those examples would kind of be for me, Jesus Aguilar and Max Muncy. The year that those guys kind of made their names for themselves, mm-hmm. they had that hot week or the hot 2 weeks, but they stuck. And it's very, you know, they didn't cost much. Maybe they did the second week right after the first hot week, but then they ended up actually being sustainable. I just don't see that for Sawinski. Mm-hmm. So his name's fun to say.
Yeah, it just sounds like a baseball player name. I love it. So that wraps up the rookies. Just really quick, we're going to end with just a couple of teams to keep an eye out for ahead of Fab that have some good schedules. So tell me what you think of these. So just throw out some names and some players and teams. But the Toronto Blue Jays, they're going to get 8 games all at home next week. And I'm sorry, I guess when I was talking about the Duran being up for the or not being able to go for the weekend, that's going to be early next week. So it's going to be 3 against the Boston and then 5 against Tampa Bay. And then Minnesota gets 8 as well. They'll be 5 at Cleveland, including a doubleheader, and then 3 versus Baltimore. These are teams that I guess Toronto, most of their players are rostered. You're really sort of diving into the dumps of 15 teamers, kind of hoping somebody like a Raimel Tapia or Kevon Biggio pop off. But 7 of 8 right-handers are expected to who the Blue Jays are expected to face next week. So that is good for somebody like Tapia to be in the lineup, especially if George Springer is not at full health. So somebody to keep in mind for next week. And then Danny Jansen, 43% in online championships, which means he's available in 57% of them, and he might be up this weekend, a guy that might go for a lot if he hits a home run. Minnesota, less appealing names, but again, it's like your boring Gio Urshela, like Trevor Larnach, if they get a bunch of righties, a couple of guys to keep in mind there. And anything stick out to you for any of these teams?
Yeah. Let's go to the Blue Jays. I think when we talk about those three teams and then you tack on volume, that's great. And then you look at team context, they have the best out of those three teams, the Mariners, the Twins, and the Blue Jays. We like the Blue Jays, and it's Tapia and it's Biggio. You talked about the right-handed hitter or pitching that they're going to be facing, which bodes well for both of them being left-handed hitters. Biggio's been getting a little bit more of an uptick in playing time slightly. I was kind of disappointed to see that he didn't start today, especially with he pinch hit yesterday after Springer got hurt, and then wasn't in the starting lineup today, which I was kind of surprised by, but maybe that'll help temper some people's expectations on him because people have kind of sick of his shit as it is. I have actually kind of had a little bit of a 180 on him. I think that he's kind of seeing the ball. I said that in the Slack a couple weeks ago. I think he's, and I was joking with you about it when I was like, look, I'm being active in Slack. Look what I'm saying. But I think he is actually seeing the ball just a little bit better. He finally did hit a home run the other day. He's got a stolen base. I think he's done this all in the last couple of weeks. And if Springer, do you know the exact status on Springer? Is he set to miss time? If so, that's another boding well moment for Biggio. Okay, so he's getting an MRI on it.
Yeah,
we know like how this goes with Springer.
Yeah.
Hope he's okay. But anyways, Tapia and Biggio. I do have interest in 15 teams or 12 teams. I think that the volume is going to be there for both of them up the upcoming week. Got the 8 games. Tapia's kind of been hitting all right too. So over the last 2 weeks, 348, 375. Yeah. Right. If he's going to play and he's on the Blue Jays and he's seen righties, mm-hmm. ride it. Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, one so other.
I'd like him the best.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you there. Seattle, one last team to mention. They got a nice 7 games at home. Maybe not the best hitter's park, but 3 against Baltimore, 4 against Oakland, 2 subpar teams. But yeah, they have some decent pitchers. But basically, again, all the best players are pretty much rostered. You're kind of hoping for at least maybe Jared Kelenic gets called up because he's doing pretty well in the minors and, you know, ahead of an all home week. I think a lot might have to depend on like if Justin Upton gets hurt between now and then because they're kind of short bats. Mitch Haniger is not ready to be back yet. Kyle Lewis does not have a timetable. They are short outfielders. Mm-hmm. So if Kelenic is hitting well, I guess at some point it might make sense to call him up. Maybe Monday we'll see. And then Cal Raleigh, 69% in an online championships, 94% rostered in 15 teamers. So people have been picking him up because he's been hitting 200, but he's been hitting some bombs and looked much better in the month of June.
I'm laughing at myself. Just as I thought I was getting good at fantasy baseball, I thought I was sneakily outsmarting my room and my league mates by adding all this Dylan Moore because he stole four bases last week. His playing time was going up. He finally exceeded 20 plate appearances in a week. And now the dude's nowhere to be found this week. So apparently I still don't know what I'm doing, and I'm searching for my John Birdie. But Dylan Moore was somebody that I was kind of getting a little bit I was getting intrigued by, and he was in a couple leagues where I didn't add him. Like if I put in a $3 or $4 bid, notice he was getting scooped up for $5 in a couple spots as well. So there was other people in the industry that were kind of looking for something as well, but I'm not sure that it's going to be there. But you did mention that they are short staffed, you know, Kyle Lewis, Mitch Haniger. We could see Jay up, you know, disappear again any given day. And if you're in really, 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 really desperate need for stolen bases, and if there is any signs of Dylan Moore getting that playing time, then that's somewhere I would look to go.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, it'd be nice if they would let him hit against righties a little bit more, and that's kind of the problem. They had that three straight games against lefties, or even four, I think, and he was playing every day. He was running, and he hits them well. It's kind of always been his thing. We'll see how it lines up for this week, but in those teams have Baltimore and Oakland have primarily right-handed starters, which means, you know, unless someone gets hurt, Dylan Moore may not play a lot, but yeah, I mean, obviously we saw what he did in 2020, a little bit of it faltered a little bit last season, but yeah, desperate times call for desperate measures in 15 teamers when we're looking for certain stats, and he is one of the fastest, best base.
Yeah.
Players.
Like if he can just like, right. It is a playing time. If he gets a playing time and even hits fucking 150, dude, like he's going to steal a massive amount of bags, but yeah, it's the playing time. You got to see the playing time.
Any last minute thoughts? Obviously, you know, wish you a quick and speedy recovery. I'm sorry that
I don't know. Yeah, I was riding that for the last 3 hours. So hopefully that was what came and gone, and my tummy's feeling a lot better now. Like I'm a 12-year-old, right? So yeah, I'm excited to watch the rest of baseball tonight and see where my team shake up, because I'm already. I like, you know, when you had Phil on, I really like that he said that, like, he's checking his teams every, like, 30 seconds to see where he's moved in the standings. Mm-hmm. When somebody wins over $300,000 and crushes and has the best fantasy baseball season of all time, you don't think for them to follow up in mid-May or whenever it was, early June, and be like, yeah, I'm already frantically looking at all of my teams. I thought that was really awesome, because it makes you, you know, put it's kind of like humbling. It's like, yeah, I kind of do that too sometimes, you know.
And we all do it differently. I mean, okay. You know, there's the extreme, like, you know, like, you know, Cebro, Gecko, Hall of Famer, who hardly looks at things, and the people that refresh all.
I think he looks everyone. A little bit more than he says.
Oh, no, I'm sure. Of course he does. But, yeah, I mean,
there is a different magnitude own way, though, but for each one. Yeah.
But it's fun, right? Like, I love it too. Like every night, I should be paying attention to other dogs when I'm walking my dog, like just in case. But yeah. I'm kind of scrolling through. I'm just checking my teams. I sort them by, you know, how many points I moved up and down for the day. So it's fun. That's what we love to do.
So we're all creatures by habit. How do you go about looking at like the nightcap? Do you click on my team? Do you click on your top team? Is that the main event team? Do you go to stats live scoring, or do you look at league standings first? Or do you look at box scores first? And then you're like, okay, now I want to scratch at my live scoring after you digest box scores from just an app? Or how do you dive into that?
I'm looking at, I mean, I'm because I'm playing DFS, so I know everyone, how everyone is hitting at that moment in time, because I'm looking at box scores all night, but and watching games, especially, you know, we're recording the podcast and I'm watching, but usually I'll want to check like the team, you know, my best main event team, and just, you know, just confirm that things are looking good. I like to see the little, you know, up point and a half in the standings and things like that. I look less, of course, on days when you know that your pitcher got shelled. It's like, I'll just wait. But then I'll just kind of go through a process and just sort of look at them all one at a time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, apologies for that short and minor break. I'll be sure to edit that out, so you guys will have no clue, even though you do have a clue because we told you. So, yeah. That's how close we keep it with you guys. But we're always thankful for you guys listening. If you haven't, please subscribe, rate, and review. You can follow Vlad on Twitter at RotoGut, and you can follow myself on Twitter at _MattyWood_. And I think we want to try and spread love and get some of our baseball subscribers that maybe aren't in subscribing for fantasy football. We'll try and think of some fun and unique ways to maybe give out to some fantasy football subscribers, giving them out some fantasy baseball subscriptions, and then vice versa, maybe give out a couple of our baseball subscribers, get them over onto our football side of things too. So we'll think of something to do in the near future with that, with football shaping up. I know that you and I are going to be doing some football drafts sooner than later, but we're going to keep it baseball around here 24/7, you and I. So any last final words on your end before we get out of here?
No, for Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at _MattyWood_ and at RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.